Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey everyone, I'm Ian DeBorja, and welcome to IMDb's Movies That Changed My Life, a podcast where your favorite stars break down the films that made them who they are today. This week's guest is director, producer, and screenwriter Zack Snyder. You know Zack as the director of films like Zack Snyder's Justice League, 300, and Man of Steel, but you can see his new film, Army of the Dead, on Netflix right now. Zack and I talk about how Arthurian legend influenced the movies he makes, returning to the zombie genre after 17 years, and the movies that changed his life. If you're enjoying the show and haven't given us a review yet, please do and join the conversation on social media with the hashtag Movies That Changed My Life. Thanks again for listening. Here's Movies That Changed My Life with Zack Snyder. Zack Snyder, thank you so much for joining Movies That Changed My Life. I am a big fan of your films. I'm honored for you to join me. How's it going today?
It's going great. How are you doing?
Good, good. So I was lucky enough, I got a chance to watch Army of the Dead, which is your new film that actually just came out on Netflix by the time this airs. It would already be available to stream. But for those who haven't had a chance to watch it yet, can you tell me what Army of the Dead is all about?
Yeah, Army of the Dead is a zombie heist movie, if there is such a genre. We might have invented it. There's a zombie outbreak in Las Vegas, and the government builds a wall around the city to trap the zombies inside. And then sometime later, one of the casino owners hires sort of a team of zombie killers to go into the abandoned city and get the money out. And the only thing they have to be afraid of is the zombies. And of course, the humans, because the humans will screw you every time.
Of course, of course. I mean, it's not a zombie film if there's not a human screwing someone over, right? I mean,
that's absolutely
part of, basically part of the DNA.
No, that's a trope that you got to go all the way with. Yes,
of course. I mean, let's talk about your amazing cast. It's great to see such a diverse cast. I mean, putting that just like right from the top, we have Dave Bautista, Amari Hardwick, Ana de la Reguera, Theo Rossi. What was it like compiling this group of actors for this film?
Well, the way I did the casting was exactly like in the film. I drove around to their houses and I would pitch them. No, that is not how I did it. But that would be cool. It would have been cooler. And then they'd be like, you son of a bitch, I'm in. I would just have a couple, like a piece of, you know, production art, and I would show it to them and they'd be like, all right, looks risky, but I'm in. But that's not the way I did it. I should have done it that way. That would have been cooler for this interview. Maybe for now I should just say I did it that way.
Yeah, method casting, right?
That's cool. Like I find them somewhere. They're like out to dinner and I'm like, hey, Bautista, Zack Snyder, you want to put the acting pants back on and go make a movie? I don't know, something that sounds crazy. But what we did do was, of course, with Dave, I've been a fan of, and I wanted to work with Dave, and he didn't want to do it, actually. I called him, and I said, Dave, you want to do this zombie movie? He was like, no, I don't think so. And then I said, but I wasn't finished. It's got a lot of heart. And he was like, wait a minute, what do you mean? So he read the script, and then he called me back immediately. He said, okay, I didn't realize. I didn't know. And I said, it's okay. It's okay. And then the rest of them, you know, look, I had this idea that, for one, you know, the movie takes place in, you know, the Southwest of America. And so there's a huge Latino influence, you know, culturally. And, you know, I always say, like, my native, the food, whenever I'm anywhere in the world, I eat Mexican food. That's my food. That's the food of my, that's my cultural, that's the food. Like, I'm not, like, if I was from Italy, I'd say, you know, I eat Italian food, but I'm from Southern California. So that's the food. And I love it more than anything, by the way. I can't live without it. So, you know, I just wanted there to be that influence to be really strong in the film, you know, and Raul do an amazing job in the movie and really represent amazingly well. And then they're incredible. And they're also really funny and fun and great actors, and everything about it is perfect. And then Amari, you know, I needed a philosopher, and he felt like the perfect guy for the job, and doesn't disappoint. And he's not too bad with it, but the giant saw either. He will saw you in half.
Yeah, there's a lot of really fun, like, zombie violence, Zack Snyder violence. I mean, from the get-go, I mean, there's a classic Zack Snyder-esque intro and prologue to the film with the opening credits and the cool music hits. And it reminded me that, you know, people, in case they don't know, your first feature film, 2004, Dawn of the Dead, and, you know, however many years ago that was 17 years, like, what have you learned, or what is something you are excited
to bring? Also has a pretty cool title sequence,
Amazing title sequence. What have you learned since then that you were, like, excited to bring into this one?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I don't, you know, you don't really think about it in those terms. You know, you don't go like, oh, how am I smarter? What can I do better? Like, I don't, you know, I didn't do that. I probably should have. But your instincts probably are a little bit better. You know what I mean? Like I think the basic way I think about constructing a scene, writing, all of that stuff, I'm just better at, you know, just had more practice, more cuts. You know, I've taken more cuts. And so I was the DP and also camera operator.
Right.
And so the group was a lot smaller. And it was great. It was a great experience. And I think maybe in the end, I just was, the way I've changed is, like, in this case, I was just like, okay, well, I'm just going to get really deep in it. I'm going to get in the quicksand, and I'm going to take a swim, and it's going to be fun. And it was, and it really, frankly, it was it was my favorite sort of cinematic experience, you know, as far as, you know, the way the movie was made and the joy that I had making it.
Well, great. I mean, it comes off on the screen completely, and once again, it's out right now on Netflix. So if you haven't had a chance to watch it, go tune in, watch it now, for just, like, what a way to kick off spring, and the weather's changing, and
it's
summer.
It's really a summer. You know, the cool thing about it, I think the thing that Netflix has been amazing, and Netflix has been an amazing partner. One of the things is that, like, you know, I made this movie. I thought this was going to be relatively, like, small movie. You know, it's kind of just,
sure,
you know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, just like a zombie romp, and we could keep it kind of small. But they, to their credit, they liked the movie, and they were like, no, this is we're going to turn this into, like, a summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
And so we're going to pull out all the stops and just go for it. And that's pretty cool. And they have quite a little distribution platform. I don't know if you're familiar with the way it works. But they push a button, and 220 million people, or however many, have the movie on their TV. So you should enjoy it, because, you know,
it's a ton of fun. It's a ton of fun to watch.
It really is.
Yeah. It's a really fun watch. Once again, out now on Netflix. Go check that out. But let's jump into the two movies that we're going to discuss today that changed your life. Very exciting to talk about both of these. We're going to go in chronological order, if that works for you.
Yeah, better.
Cool. So we'll kick it off with 1981's Excalibur. It has a 7.4 out of 10 with 58,000 ratings on IMDb. Directed by John Borman. Written by Thomas Mallory, Rospo Pallenberg, and John Borman. Starring Nigel Terry, Helen Mirren, Nicholas Clay, Sherry Lungi, Paul Jeffrey, Gabriel Byrne, Liam Neeson, Catherine
Burman. First movie, right? Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah.
And Liam Neeson's first movies.
And the plot synopsis, according to IMDb, is Merlin the Magician helps Arthur Pendragon unite the Britons around the Round Table of Camelot, even as dark forces conspire to tear it apart. So talk to me. When was the first time you watched?
Patrick Stewart also.
Patrick Stewart also, correct, yeah.
It's the boy king! That's how I, you know.
when was the first time you watched Excalibur?
Saw Excalibur in the movie theater. That was an R-rated movie. I'm not sure that you, if you've seen the movie, it's very R-rated.
Yeah, I watch it. Yeah, very R-rated,
it's
yeah.
Incredibly R-rated. I was a freshman in high school, going into my freshman year of high school. So, you know, shouldn't have been. But my friend and I, they just let us in to see Excalibur. And I remember it just blew my mind from the first, you know, look, Arthurian legend is a tricky place to go. But the truth is that John Borman and this movie really distills down, I think, Arthurian legend to kind of its real kind of core essence. And it really is the kind of the purest look at it that you're going to find sort of cinematically. You know, there's been a bunch of remakes of King Arthur, you know, all over the place. And people are constantly trying to do that world. And it goes too far one way or the other, whether it's too much like, oh, the Romans were really here. So there's all this Roman. You're like, no, I don't want to see that. I want to see freaking, I want to see knights.
Yeah.
Or like, let's have more magic. And I'm like, no, I don't need more magic. I have the perfect amount of magic. You're like, Excalibur has the perfect amount of magic. It's not too much. Like you buy, like it's, Merlin's magic is not insane, you know. It's just
right
magic.
Like the dragon is like calling in fog, right? Like
summoning
a full dragon, right? Kind of based realish,
based on like natural elements that you might see in the world,
right?
And you know, it's whatever uthos pethos delphie dimbe, whatever the charm of making is that they use. I've seen the movie a couple times, so you get this, but you get this also sort of primitive England at its most kind of mythic, set in some impossible Middle Ages that doesn't really exist if you sort of trace like what the armor design really was or where they really were, but it is exactly what you imagine.
Yeah.
And the reason it's so cool to me is like it's the England of mythology, you know. Mm-hmm. it's King Arthur of mythology, and it's like a great myth kind of made real, and that's what really blew my mind about it when I saw it. Well, I didn't know that I loved that about it, but it really got me, you know.
So, you know, when I saw this was on your list, I watched it, my immediate reaction was 300, your film 300 has Excalibur like kind of written all over it. Like,
sure,
it's a historical epic that is like stylized and you know, retells a story that has been told, but it seems like, you know, you wanted to put your own, like your own spin on it and make it something like really true to you, because Excalibur, I think what stands out is that Borman clearly had his vision and like set out and did it. You know, he makes this 2.5 hour Arthurian epic. And like, rather than doing one part of like, just like getting all the Knights Round Table, he literally goes through the life of all the way through. You know, did you have
it's conception to the death of King Arthur.
Right, literally. which is wild.
Which is cool.
It's awesome. Do you have any, like, when you're writing or thinking about bringing 300 to film, was there any Excalibur inspiration in you at all?
There is. Excalibur is all over 300. It's all over all my movies. Even just like when Superman kills Doomsday, it's basically the same way that Arthur and Mordred kill each other at the end of Excalibur.
Right.
But anyway, but yes, so 300, yes. I certainly was inspired by that kind of stylization, you know, in this kind of sword and sandals, although in our case, in their case, it's sword and armor. Mm-hmm. But in my case, it was sword and sandals. But the way the fights are rendered and just the mythology surrounding them, absolutely inspired by Excalibur, and remain inspired by it. I think that the way it's affected me has changed over the years in that it has become a much more I used to think the fighting was cool and things like that, and now I just think the sort of mythology is cool.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS, or play online via Facebook games.
Do you take, like, I mean, obviously, people who are listening, I'm sure know. I mean, obviously, with Justice League and Batman v Superman and Watchmen and all these superhero films that you have done, yes. In what ways do you take, like, Arthurian legend, and have you put that, like, inspiration into, let's say, Batman or Batman v Superman or Justice League? Have you any parallels you've pulled, like, as you're writing those stories?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think just Batman creating the Justice League could easily be King Arthur. Like, we have on the wall, I was like, these are the guys. Like, Superman is King Arthur. Really, I mean, if you do it, Batman is Lancelot. You know, like, you can kind of...
Yeah.
There's a version where, and really in Justice League, those roles are reversed, and Superman is Lancelot, and Batman is Arthur. You can play that game as well, and it really rolls out pretty well, mm-hmm. You know, because Superman is always that kind of, he's a chaste figure normally. Mm-hmm. He's sexually active, let's say. But not he's not playing the field a ton.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But that kind of counters the sort of like this purity, that you want. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it surrounds Superman as a character, you know, that sure. he's sort of seen as this Christ figure or this Lancelot figure that's kind of sworn to the quest, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean? Like that, mm-hmm. that notion that like, that's first for him, you know, relationships come second, you know, he's not really in it for himself, you know, he's in it for the kingdom, if you will. So there's a lot of that. And we do play that game all the time. I also just love the imagery of the movie. And also just the way it's very sexually kind of interesting, that the way that the sex and death and sex and honor, everything's kind of bound together in this really, because you'd think like with a story like King Arthur, that it would be kind of a chaste movie as well. Like it's kind of like you'd think, oh, you know, it's a lot of courtly love. Like if you're sworn, a lady could drop you a handkerchief and you would go, you know, to war over that for, you know, and die for it, you know, and that would be, that's about as close as you would get to like, you know, sealing the deal, I guess, is how the kids would say. But like, you know, and that's fine. And like, that's cool. But I feel like this movie and John Borman really kind of explores sexuality in its relationship to it, really, and betrayal, you know, and those really amazing, the themes of, you know, why is Guinevere, why doesn't she love Arthur as much as she loves Lancelot?
Lancelot, yeah.
You know? And there's a thing at the end, you know, where he goes to Guinevere and she's at the nunnery, you know, after the affair, and she's kept Excalibur and she gives it to him and he says, you know, I hadn't held out hope that you might have it, that it might be in your care. And then she's like, yeah. And then basically he asks for her forgiveness, you know, and what he says is that he had to be king first.
Right.
And, you know, he imagines that, and I'm not 100% sure this is why, but he imagines that the reason why she went to Lancelot was because he had to love the country first. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so she was always kind of second, you know, in his heart to being king. He says, and I could come to you and we could be just man and wife.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the movie just has, obviously, just on the surface layer, it could just be about, like, knights and fighting, but
right,
when you're watching it, there's just so many layers of depth for every character. Even though there are so many characters, you know, the benefit of the long runtime is that you get to spend time with all these people, and even if you're only getting snippets of the story, you're still able to piece, like, everything together into why characters... I mean, some characters aren't introduced until the third act, and all of a sudden you care about, like, what their quest is. Final question here before we move on to your next movie. Would you ever direct a Arthurian legend film?
Yeah, I would love to. I've been working on a kind of a retelling of the Arthurian legend sort of set in the American West. You know, because my thesis was when I was sort of, you know, been working on this idea is that I tried to take Arthurian legend, which is literally the mythology of another people.
Right.
Like, I'm not English. And so but I love that mythological story. And so I thought, oh, what if I superimpose it over like the American West and just try and make it like the mythology of America, or frankly, the mythology that I grew up with, and see if I can't make those things work, you know? And so also one thing I will say though, that you've got to understand.
Yes.
Is go look also at all the John Borman movies. John Borman is like one of my favorite directors of all time. He is like a legit, like legend.
Deliverance, Hope and Glory.
Just a genius filmmaker. So
yep.
So my point is that like, you kind of got to know that it's Borman when you watch Excalibur. So like, you got to know you're getting it. Like, it's not just knights like knocking the shit out of each other. You knew there would be the deeper bit, you know?
And speaking of directors where you're going to go into the movie knowing you're going to get something, we'll go on to your second pick, which is David Lynch's 1986 Blue Velvet, which is a 7.7 out of 10 and 184,000 ratings on IMDb, written and directed by the great David Lynch, starring Isabella Rossellini, Kyle MacLachlan, Dennis Hopper, and Laura Dern. The synopsis is, the discovery of a severed human ear found in a field leads a young man on an investigation related to a beautiful, mysterious nightclub singer and a group of psychopathic criminals who have kidnapped her child. That is a great synopsis of Blue
Velvet. It's a really great synopsis. I that puts a smile on my face, that synopsis, I will say. That's the movie. Let's see. So what years again? It's 1986.
86, yeah.
Yeah. I've just arrived in film school out here in Los Angeles, California, at the Art Center College of Design right up the hill from my house. And, you know, I go see this movie in a matinee. I remember I saw it in a matinee. The theater was pretty empty. And I guess the marine layer must have been socked in when I walked in. But when I walked out, it was like just hot California sun, bright afternoon. And I was like, geez, did I just live a life? Did I just, am I me? Am I like, what happened? Am I Kyle MacLachlan? Like, what happened? Like, is there a severed ear on the ground around here? Because I am literally shaking from that movie. And that movie is like one of those, here's the genius of that movie and Lynch's movies, in my opinion, and I can't get enough of it, is the tone of the movie. The tone of the movie is so particular. Mm-hmm. It's undescribable. It transcends the synopsis by so far. All at once, you get like, you know, this kind of theater. There's this kind of feeling of a construct reality that might let you off the hook a little bit, maybe. Candy colored clown, you know. You get a love letter from me.
Right.
You're forever. You know, like that stuff is just like, I don't know where I am in this. Again, it's like weird American mythology, right?
Yeah.
And so you have this like stylized world. It's almost like watching an animated movie in some ways where like you think your suspension of disbelief will like be held out by the style. And instead it is literally enhanced.
Enhances it. Right.
It's like putting up a magnifying glass on the sun And like the world is now like this hot white beam of light that you just blinded. it's unbelievable.
I mean, similar to Excalibur, when you picked this, I was like, I mean, obviously a David Lynch is in your list of movies because similar in the way that you could watch a David Lynch movie or a Borman movie for that matter on mute and you can know who's directing it.
Oh yeah.
You could do that with your films. I mean, you can put it on mute. You don't know who watched it, but you just put it on and like stylize there. So was there like Lynchian, like the way he does his films and TV shows, did that inspire you to like in your writing and how you want to put your trademark on your films?
I think it does in that, you know, Lynch should give you confidence in your, I always say, my main thing I say to film students, people are like, well, how do I make a movie? Like, what should I do to make a movie? And I was like, well, let's put it this way. I always say, listen, you have one skill set, really, in the end. You have one thing, and that's your point of view. That's it. Like, there's no right way to make a movie. There's no right scene. There's no right movie. Movies aren't right. They are. And I think that lesson from Lynch is so strong.
Yeah.
It's so clean. He doesn't waver. All he does is like pure. It feels so pure and like from one particular, you are literally transported into a point of view that is so particular. Like, I don't know how you wouldn't like it. It's too awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. Do you think Lynch, like obviously visually, is influential? How about like the way he writes? Like, he has a very dark sense of humor that I think a lot of people put on your films.
I love it. I'm inspired by like such a master of tone, you know, and I do like a little bit of dark humor. I mean, people don't think I do, but I do. I really enjoy it. I think Army, if you see Army, you'll realize there's a lot of funny bits in it, you know, and also the way he plays with the horrific, you know, is really like, he's not afraid of like, you know, some real violence. But like, you know, it's like Peckinpah, you know, like Peckinpah.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a quote from Peckinpah where he says that like, you know, I'm a student of violence because I'm a student of the human heart, which I think is a really, and I think that kind of, with Lynch, I think, you know, he's teaching us about ourselves a lot of the time in a mythological way, like how you react to it, you know, like he'll put something on the screen that is meant to like, you know, make you recoil, but like you find yourself leaning in, you know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's like a magic trick almost.
It really is.
So you came today, you wanted to talk about Excalibur and Blue Velvet. And so our traditional final question on this podcast is, do you see a through line between the two movies as to why you wanted to talk about them today?
Both movies kind of pulled me in directions, you know, like you can see a movie and it washes over you. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you enjoy it and it's cool. And you liked it and you would tell your friends to see it, but it didn't change you. It didn't pull you. It didn't like it's like, you know, a tide sweeping out and it just like drags you into the ocean. Like that, those two movies did that to me. And I think because both movies caught me at this kind of point in my life where I was developing or I was thinking and I was constantly into imagery and how to tell a story and all those things. Because at the time I was always shooting my Super 8 movies. I was doing like, even in high school, when I was a freshman in high school, I was shooting movies the whole time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just really, those movies, and I would say Excalibur first because it opened a door of imagery to me that I thought was amazing. And then I think Blue Velvet because it showed me sort of the power, emotional power of what movies could do to you within this context of like a stylized world. Which I thought was really like, it wasn't trying to be, you know, the conversation. It was like its own, you were in a particular world.
Right. When you watch these movies and you are someone's a fan of your films, like it becomes so obvious, like that there is like inspiration and, you know, we can thank these movies for the incredible work you've done and given to film fans. Recently for Army of the Dead, which again is out right now on Netflix. Any last words about Army of the Dead before we wrap here?
One of the reasons you're going to want to see Army of the Dead is because, you know, there's humans and there's zombies. And of course, we talked about earlier, the humans will double cross, but there's always the equalizer out there. And in our case, it's a zombie tiger that will take sweet revenge for his fallen comrades. You can't reason with it. You can't, it's not going to be, it looks kind of nice, but it is not.
No, it is not. Absolutely not. Yeah, you come for the zombie and then you're going to stay for the zombie
tiger. Stay for the tiger, dessert because it's delicious.
Exactly. Zach, thanks so much. This was a ton of fun. I'm glad we got to talk about these movies.
My pleasure.
Have a good one.
All right, cheers, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to head over to imdb.com/podcasts for more content on Zach and to easily add the movies that changed his life to your IMDb watch list.